Hey, you are listening to The Workplace Leader. This is the podcast where we go behind the scenes of corporate real estate, talking to industry experts about how they shape the next generation workplace. I'm your host, Sabine M., and in today's episode, I'm speaking with Brittany Van Matre. Brittany is Director of Workplace Strategy and Operations at Nike. Hi, everyone. I'm really excited. I've been looking forward to this conversation actually since I've scheduled it, because for a large chunk of my career, what my guest's company has done has been a benchmark for what I was doing. So I'm speaking with Brittany Van Matre today. Hi, Brittany.
Hi, nice to be here.
She was Director of Workplace Strategy and Operations at Nike. Can we dive a little into what you've done in that role and what your professional background is?
Yeah. Okay. So I'll start with first my professional background. I started my career at KPMG in consulting, and I did that for 4 years, a variety of different industries and projects, as consulting is. And then I went into Nike, and I just finished an 11 plus year career over there. It's been a great journey, starting first in what we call our internal audit practice. So really looking basically from a consulting lens at different facets of the company and helping those areas improve. Then I decided I really wanted to go into product creation, and I started first in apparel product creation and then moved into footwear and did things such as sourcing, manufacturing, lean manufacturing, costing, working with designers on product development and everywhere that we get our product, and spending a ton of time in Asia and really learning like the heart and soul of the company. And then from there, I moved to Europe and went kind of back into my more consulting strategy brain and did strategy and finance for the Jordan brand for a couple of years, and then moved into our marketplace transform area, where we were at that time were putting different installations into different retailers such as Snipes in Europe or Dick's Sporting Goods in the United States, and working one-on-one with retailers to improve the consumer experience. So stayed in the consumer experience space for roughly 3.5-4 years. And then got really interested in the employee space. There's a lot of parallels between the consumer experience world and the employee experience world, because actually consumers are also employees. And you see more of that happening in business now, you know, that the perception of consumers is the same as employees. They want to get their food fast. They want to have a seamless experience. They want to have a wonderful workplace experience as well as a consumer experience. So I took a lot of those learnings and applied that to the employee experience space, where I sat in the strategy team for our world headquarters, which is about 17,000 employees. So it's like managing kind of a small city. And over the course of a year and a half, I was able to create the what we call the Nike Workplace Experience Strategy. And it's a very holistic strategy, but at the center of the strategy is the employee themselves. And I think a lot of times in this topic of real estate and employee experience and workplace wellness, all of these sort of areas, a lot of times the employee themselves is not at the center of that conversation when we're looking at what kind of real estate are we going to procure? What are we going to divest of? How are we going to create services across our different campuses? What kind of structural setup are we going to have for different working designs? Like, are we going to do activity-based working? Are we going to have one-to-one seating? Things like that. It was interesting when I came into the role that, the employee and their needs and wants and desires were not always looked at first. It was more of like a real estate play or what is the rest of the industry doing? And so I was really able to bring that lens to the work. And that actual strategy is now being proliferated across all of our different business units and coming to life, which is exciting to see.
That's quite exciting that you came from that product development and consumer experience and are bringing a very different perspective into the mix? Because yeah, a lot of times corporate real estate very much financially driven, not so much by the employee experience. It's only changing now. How big is Nike's real estate portfolio then?
I am personally was responsible for the Americas region, which is in the hundreds of thousands of square feet. So we have a world headquarters that's accommodating 17,000. We have location in New York, a location in LA, a location in Mexico City, a location in Chicago, as well as distribution centers across that area, as well as a European headquarters and a greater China headquarters. So you can imagine the breadth of what we're talking about is quite large.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And then what goes along? Yeah, I mean, I know it. I mean, the distribution centers alone, they add so many square feet that if you're not familiar with that type of space, you're like, why is your real estate portfolio that big? But it's just those buildings alone add like the portfolio of another mid-sized company.
Yes. Yes, a lot of product is housed there.
Yeah. Yeah, and they're very fascinating assets, actually, I have to say, with all the technology and machinery that goes in there and needs to be catered for very, very technical, specific requirements there as well. I learned a lot from the projects around disease, I have to say. What I actually wanted to ask before I took that side tour was, how is the corporate real estate team set up, or how was that? You said you were responsible for Americas. I'm assuming there must have been someone in EMEA and the Asian region as well. And were you then all rounders, or did you have specialists for certain disciplines as well?
Yeah. So the way our org is pretty much set up is that there's a global function that oversees everybody, and we work in Americas, Europe, and Greater China. So there's like those three main areas, partly because there's global headquarters within those three areas as well. And then, of course, we would have somebody very specialized in real estate that would be looking after real estate deals, when our lease is coming up, when do extensions need to be made, doing a lot of the negotiations. And then we have an employee experience team who's really focused on basically creating the most premium employee experience that we can. So like frequently working with different agencies to look at what is the future of work, what is going to connect employees with the brand, what is going to connect them with purpose, and how is that going to come to life? Do we need to have, like I said, like one-to-one seating? Do we need to have a lot of collaboration space? Do we need to do like on-site, off-site spaces? So a lot of those questions there. And then a brand design team, an environments team to actually bring it to life from a construction point of view. And then I sat in a strategy team, which kind of touched all of them and was responsible for doing like the corporate strategic review, the annual operating plan, learning and deciding where we should spend the budget for the year. So we have a lot of different focuses and a lot of people who want a piece of the pie, if you will, but where exactly should we spend that money? That was part of my role, as well as day-to-day things like doing the quarterly business reviews, really operating in like a chief of staff sort of perspective. So really like herding all the people together, getting consensus on decisions, things like that.
Which is actually a great point, the decision-making. Who was involved in that? I overheard here that you did have the budget responsibility within the real estate team, but you took into regards other stakeholders as well.
Oh, yeah. So we would have a, you know, a robust occupancy plan and real estate plan that would really drive a lot of the decisions in terms of what we needed to do. In the last year and a half, specific to Nike, there's been a lot of push to renovate aged assets just because, you know, the company is older and the campus is older, and we do need to renovate a lot of the spaces to make them state of the art, cutting edge, you know, and that's been like a journey that Nike's been on for a while. And so with that, there has to be a lot of consensus in terms of what's going to go into these spaces. How are we going to do an invest to divest plan? And really really it's every function has a role in that. And I would say that that's very culturally significant for the company, is that there are some companies, I think, that they don't drive a consensus-based decision-making model. You know, they have like one person that will really make the decision. But at Nike, it's very much, how can we collaborate to move forward in the best possible way? You know, there's somebody driving that conversation, and that's usually the VP of the function. But really, it's a holistic, collective, everybody's voice at the table, which of course is good and bad, because you have a lot of competing priorities and people with different objectives. And in general, though, it's everybody has a say in where the money's spent and what we do next.
Well, I guess that set up now during this crisis situation of the pandemic is actually gave you a head start, because I followed a Harvard Business School presentation exactly on how do you handle crisis situations. And what they said was, this is a situation you're unfamiliar with. There are no rules. So what you should do is get different stakeholders who represent different priorities and goals within the company on the table and discuss valid options. So you've already done that.
I think in terms of like how businesses reemerge from the global pandemic and different ways of working, I think is going to be determined. I think there's a lot of different ideas happening out there in the market. Like, you have a lot of the big tech companies in the Silicon Valley who have just said, you know, you can work from anywhere that you want, which creates an interesting dynamic in terms of talent attraction and retention, you know, because that's quite attractive as like a software developer or, you know, an engineer to be able to work from wherever I want for and make a very good salary. Whereas Nike has chosen a more, and other companies as well, have chosen a more conservative approach, I would say, in terms of requiring employees to come back 3 days a week. So I think there's different schools of thought on how we will reemerge. And I think it's very TBD in terms of how it all pans out and like where the talent decides to go and how much flexibility is too much. And I think those are questions that are big. I think if companies in general can continue to look at the individual and the employees themselves and like, what are their needs? What's driving them? What's going to motivate them? I think that's going to be really important. But yeah, I think the overall like consensus and like how things are going to develop is yet to be determined.
Pretty much assumptions at this point in time. Also around the behavior of employees, what I think will be important that is that companies keep that openness to actually listen to their employees. There were a lot of surveys done in the past year, but again, we're humans, we change a lot. I could say that my behavior was really predictable of whether I came to the office or not when it was possible. So that multiplies to the many, actually. So only time will tell.
Yeah. And you have the conversation nowadays about, you know, like women and mothers have suffered more in the pandemic, you know, than their male counterparts because of just the nature of being a mother and having to take care of the household and whatnot. And a lot of women, I think, are in positions now that it's not really conducive for them to go into an office 3 days a week or, you know, like there's a things, dynamics have changed. And I think how do companies themselves best honor the different needs of employees and the different behaviors that have been developed over the course of the pandemic, I think is going to be really important. And like you said, like the ever evolving nature of it. Yeah.
When you just said about females and caretaking roles, I heard an interesting conversation as well. I think it was with Arianna Huffington, where they actually said, well, the workplace as we know it today, it comes from an era still where mostly men were in the office and they didn't need to separate their private and their work lives because someone at home would take care of that. So it doesn't actually cater to the needs that we have today.
Yeah. I mean, you could say that like, and it's factual truth. Like, we are still operating based on the Industrial Revolution, you know, mindset, like go to the specific location, clock in, do your work, you know, and then go home. And that's like, I mean, we're not making widgets anymore. We're like making products and strategies, and we're doing such dynamic work, but like the fundamental mindset is still the same. And you can see like there's a lot of businesses who are like, a lot has been disrupted in the last year and a half. And a lot of businesses are not heeding that call. They're like trying to like sweep it under the rug kind of, and be like, all right, now that we're all vaccinated, like everybody comes back. But it should never have been like that in the first place, you know? So there's a radical disruption that needs to happen. Like the last thing I want to see is like the traditional mindset being instituted again, you know, because that's not the way it's going to go. And those businesses are going to lose talent. And I think that's already, you're already starting to see like this, they're calling it the great resignation. You know, a lot of people are turning over and leaving. And I've seen it in my work. I'm one of those people. I think that's, yeah, there's the working world has totally been changed. And I think it's going to take a couple, like 2, 3, 4, 5 more years to really see the ramifications of the pandemic on the corporate world.
It should have been a wake up call for everyone to realize we can do it like that. And if we can, why shouldn't we? Why should the office be such a sad place that you dread going to?
And now it's the question of what is the office, you know, like what is the office now? If it isn't this place that you have to clock in and out and like you feel forced, you know, to be there because of traditional mindsets and the way things have always been done. So now what is it? And I really think it's like a world headquarters to me is going to be just like an amazing place where I can rejuvenate. I can connect with my fellow colleagues. I can have spaces for collaboration. I can work individually if I want there. I can attend events and engage in community. That's going to be the whole purpose of an HQ, in my opinion. It's not going to be about the work. It's going to be about how do I connect and engage with people that are doing like-minded things, like-minded people, and like we're connecting in community. Yeah, I think that's what's going to really drive the future of the office space as we know it. Because most people work better at home. Like productivity has been amazing in this period. So
that's true. The issue here being for the corporations is that how do you plan space demand with that, right? You don't know how often people are going to come in. What types of spaces will they use? There's no way to know right now. And I think a lot of them are afraid of that uncertainty and would rather have that blueprint for the future, being like, okay, it's all going to be cool collaboration spaces and then everybody's going to come. But that's not, there's no shortcut to this.
No, no. And I think it needs to take these functions. In Nike, it's called workplace design and connectivity. In Google, it's called the RES group, R-E-W-S group. I don't know exactly. Real estate, workplace services. I think that's what it stands for. So every big company has this function. And what I think that these functions should do, and what Google is doing really well, based on the New York Times article that came out recently, is testing. Test things, you know, like create a pop-up space on campus with amazing food and a cool venue for people to work in. Like, create that and see how many people show up, and create different opportunities around food, and create different opportunities around collaboration spaces and having an offsite, onsite. So I love what Google's doing around flexible furniture and creating like circular, they call like fireplace sort of settings, you know, where like you're sitting in a circle around like a piece of technology that allows you to collaborate digitally. I think that's going to be huge. And any investment in technology and hybrid technology, I think is the way to go. I think it's less, honestly, it's less about what your campus looks like. Like, of course you should not have like fluorescent lighting and like, you know, terrible furniture, but I think it's less about what it looks like and more about like how it functions and what you're offering there, you know, like how is it unique and different. So I think a lot of money goes into like knocking out walls and like totally doing renovations, and when in reality I think the employee themselves, like of course they want a nice environment, but They want something that's functional and they want to have fun. I mean, they want to have fun and be purpose driven at their work. And yeah, sometimes I think these groups overthink it, you know.
It may sound tacky, but it's somehow about making employees feel the love you have for them, the cherishing them, their contribution. And you need to find out what actually drives that. And I think for Google, as we had that example, food has worked very well over the past decade, actually, but that won't work necessarily for all companies. Will be different things. And you need to have some kind of a long breath to really see that through. Because if you do those pop-up spaces, of course, people are going to come in the beginning because they're curious. So you can't take the data from like the first 2 weeks and say, okay, this is working great. Let's do it everywhere. You need to see it in the, yes, in the long term as well. And then what I think as well is cultures are different. I'd be curious to hear about your opinion because you've been in Europe and the US as well, and you have colleagues in Asia. Where are the difference in geographies and cultures that you need to respect here?
Yeah, it is so different. Because in Europe, it is very much about the longer lunch break, you know, getting together with colleagues, having great food, having a nice place to sit. I also think in Europe, it's more about like, what do you do after work? You know, how are you engaging with people that you work with? But after work, it's much more on a social level in Europe. And also in Europe, you have a melting pot of different cultures within one HQ. So how do you honor that? And like, how do you celebrate that? I think is an interesting like thesis to dive into. In the United States, it's more about individual work. It's more about individual contribution. But yet I see in the United States, there's like that, a lot of disconnection and a lot of like social disconnection, you know? And I think that's been totally exacerbated in the pandemic. Like isolation is like really big. So I think how do you then bring people together in community in the United States? How do you, and around what? If it's not food like it is in Europe, or like, then what is it? You know, is it big events like at Nike, for example? Can we leverage our athletes to bring people together? You know, is that going to be a useful approach? It could be. And then in China, I think it's, I've never worked in an HQ in China, but I can imagine that there's going to be different ways that are going to really resonate with the people in China to get to as far as like bringing people together. And so I think every culture has to look at it differently, for sure.
And there's also, when you look at office design, a lot of differences. I remember I visited the Adidas, or was actually Reebok headquarters in Boston. I don't think it exists anymore. It's been moved to Oregon as well. But back then, my boss, he was like showing me the new cool workplace environment they did there. And at first he showed me the old, and we went into an open plan office with all these gray cubicles, really old furniture, really not nice. And then he was like, and now we're going to look at the new place. So we went one floor up. And then it was the exact same open plan office, but with white cubicles that had like red cushions on it. And I was like, okay, yeah, sure. That's nice.
Yeah.
It was weird. And we actually did a study this year as well, where we asked about corporate designs in the US specifically, and we did the study in Europe as well. There as well, a lot of corporations are still vested in that cubicle and assigned seat situation, a lot of one-on-one, not that flexible really. And you mentioned it earlier as one of the things you explored in terms of consumer and employee experience. Do you think that people want their own desk, or are they willing to give it up for having the flexibility to work whenever, wherever?
I definitely think they're willing to give it up, for sure. I think that that is an old adage. I think the one-to-one seating is completely gone. I personally think that, especially after the pandemic. But I don't think that just investing, because a lot of companies will invest in open concept plans, you know, but it looks just like before in a way, you know, because it's just rows of open desks, you know, and you can plug in your laptop anywhere or you can hotel and have a reservation system. You can hotel anywhere. Honestly, like that's ugly too. It's just doing the same thing, but in a different way. You're just creating rows of desks, you know, like, and not assigning people to them, but the look and the feel and everything is the same. So what really is better is to create just like a bunch of diverse spaces, because not everybody even works at a desk anymore, you know, like, yeah, some people might like to work at the desk, but some people like to work in like a cafe, and some people like to work outside, and some people like to work standing up. Some people like to work in like a really, you know, small space, like very, you know, intimate and personal. Some people like a desk. There's so many ways that people work now that creating just like floors of desks, whether they're assigned or not assigned, is, you know, that's also very old-fashioned thinking. But definitely like unassigned seating is here to stay. But when creating environments for people to work in, it's not just about desks. So I think that's a key thing too.
Now, we've said it's about the experience that you're creating with the settings you're providing. And you said it as well, it comes with a little bit of a program as well. What kind of events are there and opportunities to connect, groups that you could join? Yeah, these kind of things. I've talked recently to people who worked in innovation teams as well. They said, well, we're hosting these workshops where we have like, we're just showing people how to do something that doesn't necessarily tie into their job. And then sometimes it does create, though, later ripple effects for them using it and actually in inventing something new that does help their job, although it wasn't the purpose. But the idea behind it was not that it spikes that, but rather that people come together from different departments and share an interest in something. So that's something you need to foster. And what's really hard, though, is how do you measure that? How do you put the employee experience and well-being into metrics that you can follow? Do you have an idea?
Yeah, that's always been a really tricky thing. Yeah. And it's really hard to measure. Like you were mentioning the pop-up space, you know, and like how is that going to resonate over time? And of course, you can use like sensor data, attendance data, badge swipe data. I mean, there's all sorts of like data points you can measure to see like traffic flow and where's utilization happening. And but yeah, it's in this space, I think it's less about KPIs, honestly. I think it's more about like the qualitative information that you're getting back and like the employee engagement scores and how do you connect it back to the culture itself, you know, and are people just happy at work or are they not happy at work? And I think you can really work with HR to start to determine that, you know, and connect it to turnover ratios and how easy is it to attract talent. I mean, I think there's a lot of other ways we could start looking at it. That's not strictly based on utilization, because I think that that's tough because there's so many different reasons why something would be utilized more in one week than it would be in another. You know, perhaps there's an event there or they had like a team gathering or there was, you know, school started and everybody wanted to go to the office because I don't know. There's so many reasons that utilization is high or low. And so yeah, I think there's a lot of different ways we could start to look at this rather than like strict KPIs.
And you always need to set it into perspective with other things. One metric alone is never going to tell you the whole truth. Though a lot of companies don't even have the utilization, but they're just strictly on like, okay, how many desks do I have per square yes. meter, per employee? And what's the cost attached to that? So having the utilization is an improvement in the right direction.
I think anytime there's an effort to look at metrics is good. I don't think that that's like bad, but I think it's like, how can we work cross-functionally across different organizations to have those metrics be more robust, you know, and like tell a richer story? Because a lot of times they just live and die on like a PowerPoint deck or something, you know?
Yeah, exactly. They're not meaningful. And then also a lot of times you can't really act upon them. I'm like, yeah, why do we look at this number? You can't do anything about it. It doesn't justify the effort it took to get it. Exactly. And sometimes some things might even be a quick win. If you talk to your HR peers, they will have some of the information that might be useful to you.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think in big companies, it's like creating that common goal, you know, where HR is as invested in this as workplace design, and the employee communications group is as invested in this. And so I think it's like getting people really invested in the conversation around employee experience is really important. And I think oftentimes it's very siloed, you know. HR has their goals and directives, employee comms, DEI, you know, they have their own way of going about things and their own goals. And rarely is it all tied together. So I think that's something that big companies should really work on.
Yeah, they need to include it in their overall, or more strongly included in their overall company mission and strategy, so that it's across the board, because oftentimes still that again revolves around returns of invest and the turnover you make, basically. Now, you said it earlier, you took a step in another direction, and I read as well that you're a certified teacher with the Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute. I actually read the book Search Inside Yourself. So I'd be interested in, for you, what's been some of the most valuable lessons from that program?
Yeah, it's everybody's human at work, and everybody's bringing their humanness to work, whether they know it or like it or are even, you know, remotely aware of it, they're bringing it to work. And in my opinion, the corporate space is quite an unconscious space. You know, there's a lot of people wearing masks, you know, pretending to be something that they're not. There's a lot of competition, a lot of ego, a lot of making decisions not for the best of reasons, you know, and there's a lot of separation and not a lot of inclusivity, not a lot of equity. And I think all of these things are coming to light nowadays, which is for the better, for sure. But oftentimes at work, there's a stigma around the emotional experience, you know, and the mental health and the personal development realms of life. And I see that as a big opportunity, that when we reemerge from this pandemic, it's not just about like where we're sitting, where we're working. It's about like, what is the psychological experience that we're all having? And how is my employer actually fostering that? You know, because that is so important, and it's going to just be more and more important. And I see a lot of companies are not focused on that, you know. They're providing an employee assistance helpline, and they're checking the box in terms of like things that they have to provide as a total rewards for their employees. But what else could they be doing, you know, and how else could we be responding, and what else could we be providing and creating community and destigmatizing these often really stigmatized topics? So Search Inside Yourself is an amazing program that basically it was created at Google, and it teaches you mindfulness. So ways of bringing yourself back to the present moment, tools and practices for you to cultivate a better sense of well-being, and as well as education, like what is emotional intelligence? How do I cultivate that? How am I reacting? How am I showing up? So just really increasing overall awareness of oneself at work. And I think anything in that space is going to be like hugely beneficial. So that's my work in that area.
And you have founded as well Lead Awake to raise awareness around mental health at work. Can you tell me more about what you're doing there?
Yeah, so like much of what I'm talking about now, I created basically a concept idea stage startup, which is gaining traction now, which I can't really talk about, but hopefully this year, this fall, winter, we'll be able to launch a community platform that's focused on community, education, personal development for people at work. So bringing together like-minded people who really believe in this, people like yourself who feel that there's a gap and want to engage in conversation like this and want to engage in education around this, who are getting together and basically bettering themselves and increasing consciousness in the corporate space. So excited to see how it evolves.
Yeah, that sounds amazing. I will definitely keep that on my radar. Now comes a question that I really like that I ask people at the end. So we're coming to the end. If you could magically solve any workplace problem, what would it be?
Oh, if I could magically solve it, it's basically what I'm doing with Lead Awake. I want mental health and those types of topics. I don't want that to be a stigma anymore. I want people to come to work fully as themselves and be totally celebrated in that, you know? And whether that's like things that they want to do, projects that they want to work on, a person that they want to be. Like if you're a transgender and you want to show up as a male one day and a female the next day, fucking awesome. You know, like that. I mean, just stuff like that. Like also your race, your what you got going on at home. Like I want all of this to be cool, you know, and the workplace right now, it's not cool. Like it's just not. And I want the corporate world to stand up for something new and really be the face of change across the planet and to really stand up for having people that it's not just a place that you work. It's a place that you become a better person, you know, and you do that by virtue of your work and by virtue of like what your workplace provides to you. So really like having the workplace be a place of personal change. It already is a place of personal change, but oftentimes in a negative way.
Because if you think of it, it used to be at least a place where you spend a lot of your time. And why should you spend 8, 9, 10 hours a day somewhere that you didn't like as an environment? And then also that you regretted being there.
Yeah. And that you're only there. You're, for many people, they're only there for a paycheck and retirement. Like they are, that's their only reason, you know, for being there. A lot of times. And that's really sad. And you, as an employer, you don't get a productive, engaged employee, you know, they don't want to work hard for you, you know, absolutely not. But that's in my 17 years of working, that's the majority of the people that I see. They're just going through the motions of life. And of course, that's never going to go totally away. But how can the workplace be a place where you can start to thrive, you know, personally, and that it really is a place where you can really test and be fully yourself? So that's a big mystery to solve, but really important for our world.
Yeah, it is. I'm going to close it with that. There's not much more I could say. Thank you so much for this conversation. I really loved it. A lot of things I feel in sync here.
Totally. Same.
Thanks for listening. If you have enjoyed this episode of The Workplace Leader, there's more. Go visit our blog and have a look at some of the other topics we have covered. We have just released a study on corporate real estate in Europe that you can download. Or tune into our next episode of The Workplace Leader.